Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
He's a great.
Is that what we're going with this?
He's a great coach. Now we're happy with Tommy Dempsey, but if
think Rick he could fill the Foot Doctor Center or whatever that place is called,
the Bailey Court, Doctor Bailey Court,
King of Binghamton,
his court. Yeah.
So local Rick, think Ricky could fill that up.
What
is it?
What
the Tony Kornheiser locker room or something?
No, we have nothing.
Nothing of that.
Nothing.
Not even a stall.
Tony Kornheiser urinal.
Do you know what it costs? That you have to. There's money involved.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty, then. We are live from Chatter. We are open. By the way, Chatter is open. We are a full-service restaurant for profit. Apparently, we did very well last night. We had a very good night
last
night.
Good night.
Oh, that's great.
I will be a celebrity
Sports Equinox last
bartender.
Night.
Yes, all four teams.
Yeah. We're a Dodgers bar.
Yeah. Are we a Dodgers bar now?
I guess.
Okay. I will be a celebrity bartender on Monday night.
Oh, I think I might have to come in.
What happens if I get
from
something?
From like 6:30 to 8.
So,
no, I'm just going to say.
I'm not staying all night.
Practical question.
Gary Williams will be here too.
As a celebrity bartender.
I will not make any drinks.
What will happen if I order something other than a very well-labeled beer?
I don't know how to do anything.
Like a Manhattan.
I was told I didn't. Wait, Bellini. I was told I didn't have to do anything. I just have to stand at
so
the
you'll
bar
be
and
here.
Talk to people.
That's what you mean.
But I'll be behind the bar.
Okay.
Until the regular bartender say, would you get away?
So the first night I was.
Five minutes in, I had
boned up on the Boston Bartender's Guide,
right.
Trying to memorize how to make drinks, and I had worked in the restaurant above, but it was just working
part
time.
This is in Vermont.
Yeah, was just working part time in the Rascaler while the regular bartender had a night off. I used to fill in for him on his nights off. He took off Sunday and Monday.
Not so. Like Wilbon, who takes off every
but anyway,
day. Stays in
so
Chicago.
So one of the waiters from upstairs, Smart Alec, comes downstairs and says, I need 7 tequila sunrises.
Right.
Paralyzed.
You didn't.
I had no idea what a tequila
did you flee?
Sunrise.
Did you just run away?
No, he came back and helped
me
make
them.
And he did
it himself,
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
That's the way. So I won't be doing it.
I would like to remind everybody it's Mojito Night here on Monday night at Chatter.
I don't know. I don't know how to do any of these things.
Moscow Mule.
You know what?
Bring your own copper mug.
That's why we pay bartenders.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm just here being a celebrity bartender.
This was
how Jimmy are the Crilly's bartenders idea. Here? You can be honest. No one's listening.
I have no idea because I'm not here for those things. I'm here for, again, breakfast at Chatter at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest.
Well, I can say this.
In the capital of the United States of America.
I know there are many, many different taps for beer drinkers. Many,
yes.
Both craft and what's the opposite
Michael
of
was
craft?
In charge
mainstream
of that.
Domestic?
Beers. Domestic and import and crafts. Many good beers.
Well,
Liquor Cabinet's pretty good. On occasion, I've gotten in there real early before anyone gets in, and it seems to be an excellent selection.
I would recommend for the bartenders, the regular bartenders, to have some sort of special drink in your honor on Monday, like an Orange Flame or something like that.
Orange yeah. Crush.
It doesn't matter.
An Orange Crush would be appropriate.
There you go.
Why is Denver playing?
No, you like to crush people, though.
Oh.
And you're orange, and you can freshly squeeze
orange.
The juice.
Yes. Gary Braun is here. Gene McManus is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel is running the board. Claude will be in later, right?
That's right.
As Nigel leaves. He just suddenly leaves.
Yep, gonna leave.
We have people here. Now, I want to get this right. A happy birthday to Courtney Pflug. Do I have that right?
Yes.
From Minneapolis, Minnesota, who's here apparently just to see
happy
this.
Happy birthday.
Yay,
so happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. We love Minneapolis.
Oh, Maureen is here. Maureen was here last night. Maureen wrote me an email saying that we did very well at the bar last night, which makes me very happy. To start the show, I think we should start with the baseball because thank God the Cubs are gone. Like, I'm happy for that. I'm tired of the Cubs. The Cubs beat the Nats fair and square, the two relatively even teams. But what is clear is that thing that happened to the Dodgers when they lost like 17 of 18 games in August.
Yeah, that's gone.
That was the aberration.
Right.
That thing is gone. They have two things that the Nats don't have. Well, one thing the Nats have, but they have it even better. They have a better bench. They're putting in people that don't play. Their shortstop is not even out there, and their substitute shortstop is great. They only have about four starters that play every single game, and everybody else sort of goes in when the manager, Dave Roberts, wants them to go in.
Just
and
the opposite of Dusty.
Enrique Hernandez, who is a part-time player, hit three home runs last night and drove in seven runs, and I don't know who he is. Right? And that's who the Dodgers have. They have a great bullpen. A great bullpen, as do the Yankees, but the Dodgers is even better. They have a great bench. And so what we're seeing is the Dodger team that was dominant all year. When they had that bad losing streak, you said to yourself, oh, they can be beaten. I sat here a number of times and said the winner of the Cubs and the Nats will beat the Dodgers. And it's not so. It didn't happen. Dodgers won 11-1, and Clayton Kershaw, who has been the best, he's a Hall of Fame pitcher. He has been the best regular season pitcher over the last 10 years of anybody in baseball and had terrible troubles in the postseason. I believe the Dodgers have won his last four straight starts in the postseason. And last night he went six. You don't have to go more when you got great bullpen. Six, three hits, one run, five strikeouts. They look.
And got nine in support. Yeah.
They
which
look
helps.
Really good. They look really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I could have brought in.
All right, well, I'll be the seam head expert, not to steal Gene's thunder. But I thought the divisional labor last night was I had hockey and football, she had basketball and baseball.
Hockey.
But the Dodgers look great, and that that losing streak was terrible at the face of it, but it was even I think sort of exacerbated in coverage in that it coincided with the Diamondbacks.
That's
ridiculous
right.
streak.
The
so
Diamondbacks
it was like,
and the Rockies were beating Los Angeles to death
yes.
in Los Angeles.
Right.
And Tim Kirkjian came on the show and said they're the only team in the history of baseball to have won 18 of 19 and lost 18 of 19 mm-hmm. in the same year.
Yeah. And
so he didn't know what to
we
make
don't
of
talk
that.
About this in baseball as much as we do in football and basketball and other sports tournaments, and I put that in quotes because that's what douchey people call the playoffs.
Right.
But in football in particular, it's always about, it's not who's best, it's who's playing best. And so this was, maybe history will remember that as just a really well-timed losing streak.
They're in the World Series for the first time since 1988. Do you remember 1988, what happened in 1988 with the World Series? Because I remember this very distinctly. Were you at the Olympics in Seoul?
No, I was not.
Okay, I was at the Olympics in Seoul. And came back, and a lot of people, this is a very, very, we're in Seoul for 3 to 4 weeks. You're on a 12-hour time differential. Korea actually gerrymandered their own clock, and it's normally 13 or 14 hours, and they made it 12 hours difference from the East Coast of America just to accommodate NBC and the Olympics at that time. When people got back, the World Series was going on. And the Kirk Gibson home run, because I remember where I was with the Kirk Gibson home run. I was face down on a kitchen table in my house, so exhausted. I mean, that's when the jet lag hit.
Right.
And I missed the home run. I was asleep, basically, in the soup. And there were people who sports writers, who went out to cover. And they went to that game. And there's rampant stories about these guys, 30, 40 guys, also falling asleep during this particular period of time because your body could not take that stress. That's what stunned me.
They were all emitting kimchi
right, right.
fumes.
What stunned me was that's the last time the Dodgers were in the World mm-hmm. Series.
Yeah.
That's almost 30 years. I didn't know that. I mean, the Dodgers are a healthy team, and they've never been in the World Series since. I did not know that.
Well, thinking about the Dodgers' losing streak this summer made me think about the Indians' remarkable winning streak.
Was it 22?
22.
And they're out.
And they're out.
Out
early.
They're out. Dodgers not out early.
None of those things are predictors of what happens in October.
Would you rather see, for nostalgic purposes, Dodgers against Houston, or for Dodgers against Yankees, rather, or see Dodgers against Houston?
I want to see Dodgers-Yankees.
Yeah. Dodgers-Yankees.
Yeah.
I don't know that baseball is a national sport anymore.
I'd like to see
anymore.
The Cubs get a shot to repeat.
Yeah, well, good. They had that. What do you want?
It's amazing. If you're the Cubs in that situation, you cannot let the Dodgers score a run in the first inning because you cannot give Kershaw any sort of cushion when he goes to the bump.
Did you see the first at bat, like an 11-pitch at bat, drawing a walk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see how the Dodgers have flipped the script of being the sort of robust team that loses in the playoffs, that spends a lot of money, never gets past a certain point, and to see how they can sort of flip that script. I am now a big Justin Turner fan. I hated him for the last couple of years, primarily because of the Nats-Dodgers matchups, I'll be honest. And this year, the Rendon-Turner matchup for third base for the All-Star game. But if you looked at what he did in the third inning, that's where the game was over. When he hits that single into the right field gap, I think at that point he was then 7-for-9 with runners in scoring position. But you just look at that clean hit. That is how you go out and win these series. You don't go out there and win with fluke home runs that go out of Yankee Stadium. You go out there and you position the ball around the
solo
field.
Home
runs.
Solo home runs don't get you there, which is all the Cubs had, basically. So I'm sitting there watching this game with a knitter, so not really paying a lot of attention to the game.
Knitter.
And I'm saying, Madden's got to go get him. Madden's, you know, I'm on Quintana. Madden's got to go. There's no chance. If Madden doesn't go get him, I think he left him in one batter too long, but only one batter too long. And then Madden came out of the dugout because Madden knows that we're going to
what
lose.
Happened next?
Right. The problem with getting him was that you have to put someone
in. Carl Edwards Jr. He was ready.
He's awful. He's awful. Poor pitches. That guy. So anyway.
It takes him a lot longer to score when you're just walking him around.
So the Dodgers are in, and they've mercifully helped us all by slaying the Cubs, so I don't have to listen to that.
I must say that the fact that they haven't been there since '88 is shocking. I mean, it's like the Skins have been to a Super Bowl more recently. I don't think of their stretch as being so futile.
If you ask me who are the teams in the National League that I expect to be in the World Series on a regular basis, I tell you the Cardinals and the Dodgers, because they've been in more World Series than anybody else in the National League ever.
Okay. For the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, they went to at least two World Series in each decade, and then it just sort of dried up for them.
Important question. Are we going to see Larry King behind home plate?
We haven't yet.
No.
I've been looking
Maybe
at where those
series.
Seats are, and I'm sort of surprised. We see the guy in the pink hat.
Right.
You know, with the former model wife. You know, we're a current model wife, maybe, but we don't see Larry King yet.
Expect Verlander to win tonight.
I do.
And deliver us a game seven.
I do.
Terrific.
But because I want him to, because I really like him. But I would like to see the Yankees win the whole thing. Oakland Raiders, man up. They beat the Chiefs. The Chiefs scored 30 points. You're not supposed to lose when you get 30 points. Alex Smith is 25 of 36 for 342 yards and no interceptions. He's the only quarterback in the league, no interceptions, and they don't win. They don't win because their defense at the end of the game is ridiculous, and Oakland gets two untimed downs because the same guy, right? The same guy is holding. Yep. He's holding.
Defensive
and finally,
holding.
Derek Carr, 417 yards without an interception. That's why I thought Oakland would be very good this year.
Well, he had 90 yards in the last drive.
85.
In the last, okay.
Yeah, 85.
Like, I mean, they were both
Crabtree
throwing bombs all night.
Yeah.
And the funny thing, I mean, I guess you need some luck if you're going to go six games or seven games, whatever. Alex Smith has gone now and not thrown an interception. There were multiple passes, including one that ended up as a long touchdown to, I think it was Wilson, on the Chiefs that went right off of a defender's hands.
Right.
I mean, essentially in
that's
the defender's.
That's the same play that Antonio Brown scored on last week.
Yeah.
I mean, you're seeing
against
that.
The Chiefs.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're seeing that.
So the Chiefs, who 2 weeks ago everyone said
invincible. Best team in the league.
Almost lost to the Redskins.
Yes.
And then now have lost
no
two
longer
since.
Inevitable that they win the Super Bowl. In fact, if you look at the AFC right now, who do you like? Who exactly
Who
do you like?
Who do you like in the NFC?
Well, at least if Philadelphia were to go out on Monday night and Philadelphia were to convincingly, not even convincingly, but beat the Redskins, you'd at least be able to say, well, they look good.
Yes.
In the AFC, you are by default looking at New England again, which has the
God,
worst pass.
Their defense
it's terrible.
Terrible.
It's terrible. So are you looking at Pittsburgh? Are you looking at somebody that to come from nowhere? Are you looking at Tennessee? I don't know what you're looking at.
I mean, so you're seven games in. It's crazy, but it is. As likely to be the 3-4 Raiders as it is.
They couldn't
New
go
England
to 2-5.
Point.
I mean, you wouldn't like them to go to 2-5. That wouldn't be good.
I mean, I'm looking at.
By
crazy.
The way, we're going to have Sean McDonough on in a little while. The Thursday night games have been better than the Monday night games. The scheduling,
fantastic.
They gave them a much better schedule.
Once the third inning of the baseball was over,
you moved.
Stuck with the NFL, and you could not take your eyes off that game. And then the Marshawn Lynch dust up.
That was crazy.
You know what? He's actually crazy.
Yeah.
He's actually crazy, and he should be thrown out of the league because he's actually
crazy.
I mean,
I think that might be suspendable. You run off the sideline like that.
Well, he punched an official.
You can't
push an official.
Well, he pushed an official.
Yeah.
Why are you doing that?
Because you're crazy.
Did you hear Deion Sanders' explanation of it?
No.
Because Lynch and Peters, who was in the midst of the scrum, are homeboys. And he was coming in to get Peters out of the scrum. So he
didn't look like it.
The official. That was Deion's explanation.
By the way, to your point about the schedule, I mean, it doesn't surprise you that the NFL, who owns the NFL Network, is going to put better games on Thursday.
But they didn't for 5 or 8 years. Yeah. I mean, they actually didn't. I mean, there were games where you go, I will not watch this. They would have Tennessee and Jacksonville. And you would go,
and maybe that's because people will more reflexively put on Monday Night Football than Thursday, but Thursday needs to be a game to get people to watch.
Probably right.
You know?
Last night was the first night I've had a lot of exposure to Tony Romo.
Very good.
He's great.
Very good.
He's very good. Yeah.
He's got a kind of a boyishness to him that I did not expect.
Yeah, like a very genuine in his excitement for the game.
I think he's very good, and that's why he wouldn't go be the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, because this is the long-term career. We will take a break. We will come back with Sean McDonough. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Blue Apron, Reed. We're getting, well, you know what? It's going to be 75 degrees here today, tomorrow, and Sunday, and I want to...
Cold next week.
Yeah, I want to do the Blue Apron when it feels colder.
It's a false sport, as Tony says.
Yeah, that's what it is.
For Tony.
But I like it. I like Blue Apron. It asked me what are my favorite Blue Apron recipes. I don't memorize them. And said, when did you mess up cooking a meal for a significant other or a special occasion? I don't. I don't cook for significant others. I cook for me. I don't cook for special occasions. I cook for me. And I don't mess it up because I follow the thing. Over the past 5 years, Blue Apron has created over 1,000 recipes. I really only need one, like that night, and then one the next night, however it works. It's affordable. For less than $10 per person, Premier Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. You can customize your recipes each week based upon your preferences. Blue Apron has several delivery options. You can choose what fits your need. There's no weekly commitment. You only get deliveries when you want them. It's easy. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients and can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. But don't do it alone. You need two sets of hands.
It's more fun that way anyways,
you often need three pots. Yeah. And then, by the way, if you have kids, involve your kids in this thing.
Yeah.
Teach them how to cook. It's guaranteed.
Great family activity.
Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook or they will make it right. Check out this week's menu. Get $30 off your first meal with free shipping. That's a good deal. By going to blueapron.com/TonyK, you will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron, so don't wait. You better like shallots. That's blueapron.com/TonyK. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is from Hal in Seattle, who writes, my name is Hal Duranik. Hope I pronounced that correctly. I've been following Mr. Kornheiser. That's sickening. Since I was in short pants, growing up in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., I read his columns and did my best imitations from my own college newspaper. I also listened to the radio show from time to time, mostly when my father was driving. He seemed to hate Mr. Tony, so I was always puzzled when he dialed in the show, but I digress. 10 years ago, after having moved to Seattle, I discovered I could get the radio show online and eventually through the podcast. No need to have Michael show me how. Because of that, I imagine I've listened to almost everything Mr. Tony has done. If it's been in digital form, it's kept me rooted to my childhood roots and feels like home. Anyway, here's a song from my band, The Almost Faithful. The song is City Lights, written about our modern culture and society. It's a real downer. Like that. I hope Mr. Tony and the gang likes it, plays it on the air, and being on a podcast, on the bits, I guess that would not, is that what it is? Are you wearing those dopey glasses
again? With the sunglasses.
Yes, I am. I look forward to one or two Facebook
likes. It's raining.
Right, right.
Thank
you,
Hal.
Sit in this chair.
You can listen to all of this song at the end of the podcast.
You don't want to
sit in that
chair.
It plays in Sean McDonough. And Sean is going to call the Philadelphia Washington Redskins game on Monday night. Sean, I used to really like the Philadelphia games because I could drive home afterwards. I didn't have to get in an airplane, and I could just drive home. And I wonder, I just assume that you like the Boston games and the Phoenix games because you have roots in both those cities, right?
Yeah, I do. It's nice to have a home game. As you know, it's a long schedule once we get going. You know, it's 17 straight weeks and a couple preseason games. It's longer than that. So, yeah, especially when you get in the middle of the year and you just don't feel like getting on a plane and packing or unpacking, it is nice to have a home game. But unfortunately, we've already had our one game in Arizona.
Right.
And there are no New England home games this year, so... they're all road games for me for the rest of the year.
I understand. You know, I understand how that works. I used to get really scared when the schedule came out, and I used to try to figure out, you know, where the bus would go and where I have to take a plane. And anytime there was a Washington game or a Baltimore game or a New York game or
Philly,
you know, Philly or even
Charlotte,
Pittsburgh. Buffalo or Pittsburgh, where you could get in a car and you could be back overnight was delightful, and I felt like I wasn't really working at that time because it was not a horrific
How about
trip.
When you had Seattle, then Jacksonville, then Arizona?
Brutal.
How'd you feel about
this? Just brutal. What are your this is the second Monday Night Football, but you've been on the road for a lot of years calling games. What are your favorite cities to go to call games just because of the way the entire experience is treated by the fans there?
Well, I'll tell you what, Kansas City was pretty awesome a couple of weeks ago. You know, I've heard a lot about Arrowhead and how loud it is.
Yeah.
How nice the fans are, and it certainly lived up to all that. As a matter of fact, we're going back there a week from Monday for the Denver game, which will be huge. So I'm looking forward to that. You know, I think most of the environments in the NFL have been pretty cool. You know, the thing I'm looking forward to that's coming up the most in the next few weeks is we have a game in early November at Lambeau Field, and I have not been there since I was in high school. I just went as a fan following my dad around because I was looking at colleges in the Midwest when I was in high school. So to have the chance to call a game in Green Bay and experience that atmosphere is pretty cool. You know, last year Seattle was awesome. I think Seattle's one of the great cities in America. I've been very fortunate to have been there a bunch over the years, and it never rains when I'm there, so I guess I don't see the negatives in that. But between the beauty of that city and the atmosphere in that stadium, that was another great place to go for sure.
We had one Kansas City game, and Kansas City, this is so random what I'm going to say. Kansas City, places like Kansas City and Nashville and Buffalo are really thrilled when you're there because it reflects well on them. They think, well, we've hit the big time. And so they treat you, they go out of their way to treat you well. If you get a police escort, it actually works. It actually moves as opposed to having a police escort behind 9,000 other cars. But Kansas City, Sean, had the greatest potato chips I'd ever had in my life. And I asked,
At the stadium,
the potato chips were absolutely spectacular. And I said, what is the brand? And nobody could get me the brand name. It's possible they made them themselves. They just stuck them. They were not in bags. You know, they put them in big troughs. And they were really good. And I really, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed Kansas City, I guess because, you know, they were not jaded. I mean, like, it doesn't matter to Philadelphia or New York. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You're Monday Night Football. They have Sunday Night Football. They have Thursday Night. They got everything. That doesn't. You don't matter. You've seen that, right? When you did college games, you must have mattered a lot there, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, especially, you know, places that hadn't typically been good, and then they were good. So they got a chance to have a rare game on national TV. That was always a lot of fun in college football. But, you know, it never got old walking into Ohio State or Nebraska or places like that where the fans were really into it. And you know, every game just felt like a big game. I'm going to have to find the potato chip thing when we're there in a couple of weeks.
They were great.
The one I would add to the list that I shouldn't have left off was Minnesota. That, have you been in that new stadium?
I'm not in the new one. And we did the Metrodome. They were always happy to have us. Always happy.
Yeah, that's another place. They call it Minnesota Nice. There's even a TV station that their promos for their own local station is Minnesota Nice, and they really are Minnesota Nice.
Stayed in a very weird hotel in Minnesota. One of the times in there, a really weird hotel with really weird avant-garde paintings on the walls that were creepy to me. It was downtown hotel, and it was not a bad hotel, single word name, and not a chain or anything like that, but really creepy paintings. And I remember asking Jeff Leonardo and asking Jaws, do you have creepy paintings in your room? And they said, yeah, this is really weird.
Yeah, we had one of those in Louisville with college basketball. Phyllis and Rafter and I went there, and we went to lunch in the restaurant, and literally there was a painting of a naked, completely naked male person right over the head of Jay Phyllis across the table while we're having lunch.
We
have to move to another table.
It's very weird. The things that
it was strange.
My fond memories.
We stayed in that hotel in Minnesota. We stayed in a nice place in Minnesota.
It began with a G. It was a G. Wait, somebody's here from Minnesota. The Grand Hotel? I don't think it was the Grand. Maybe it was the Grand. It was really downtown. We have a guest from Minnesota. It's her birthday. It's Courtney's birthday today, and she's from Minneapolis. Anyway, so one of the things that I really liked was the Saturday night dinner. And then on Sunday, Jaws and I would go play golf because Jaws had connections in every golf course. Is there a traditional Saturday night dinner? And do you get to play golf on the road? Because I know you play.
We do not do golf on Sunday. We're pretty busy on Sundays. Well, with meetings, you know, we always meet with the home team.
I had meetings, but they didn't care if I was there. I mean, nobody really cared. I was an idiot, so they said, go play golf.
Yeah, well, we could probably sneak it in, but, you know, usually we're kind of into cram mode by then. What I have done a couple of times in the last 2 years, as a matter of fact, I did it 2 weeks ago when we were in Chicago, was I'll either fly in a little bit earlier. Usually I'll go in on Friday night or first thing Saturday morning. But I'll go Friday morning and play golf. I did that at Chicago. We played Olympia Fields and Butler National, both of which were awesome. And then this time I stayed on Tuesday, the morning after the game, and played at Chicago Golf Club and then flew back. So, you know, I have been able to sneak in some great golf at some of these places, but it's usually, you know, Minnesota, I went a day early to play at Hazeltine, which was a lot of fun.
I played that. So this is interesting because I don't really want to talk about the football game all that much. I did. My son and I did play Butler, and we did play Chicago Golf. Wilbon is a member at Olympia Fields, if you did not know that. So I hope you charge
everybody. I did not know that.
Well, you should just go there and write his name down and charge
like
him.
Like he's Mr. Underhill.
For everything.
I wish I had known that at the time. I certainly would have done that.
Chicago Golf was fantastic. That's, Michael, that's Seth Rayner, right?
C.B. McDonald, but Seth Rayner was involved as well.
He was involved in it. But we thought, it was our last course after 8 days, and we had taken this really wonderful trip. And honestly, Sean, Butler crushed me. It was way, I mean, I'm just, I don't have any length. It was just too long. It was too hard. It was too hard. Did you like it?
I did like it. You know, I did like it. It was a fun day. You know, it's kind of just one of those fun places to go. You know, the whole experience I thought was fun. But it is hard, you know, and it is long, that's for sure. But I thought it was great. I thought Olympia was great. You know, Chicago Golf has all the history.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the founding members of the USGA. There were five clubs that got together and formed the USGA. Chicago Golf was one of them. So they have a lot of really cool history there. I'm sure you probably looked at a lot of the pictures.
Looked at the pictures. It was fantastically shabby chic to go to it. It was great.
Right.
It looked like it hadn't been touched in 100 years. It was great.
Exactly,
it really was.
Right. You know, you looked at that clubhouse and you thought, this hasn't changed at all since they built it.
Liked it. So I'm
fun experience, you know, really feel blessed. It's one of the great parts of the job, as you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you have the opportunity to do things like that. And meet a lot of nice people along the way, which is, to me, as much a part of the fun of golf as anything, is the 4 hours you spend with usually three other people having a good time.
I always felt I was treated very nicely. Doing the games, I was terrible, but I was treated very nicely. Bill Hofheimer told me that there was an HBO piece about you and your family and your brothers and all the things that you guys have accomplished.
There was. It was very nice. I think it's still airing. The original airing was the end of last month, so it might be, I think the original show airs monthly, so it might be running out of its appearances. But, yeah, there was a very nice story. As you know, Tony, my brother, youngest brother, Ryan, is the general manager of the Phoenix Suns, and Terry is the vice president of player personnel for the Arizona Cardinals. And the story happened by accident. You know, I've always been a big fan of their show. You know, there's a reason why it's won a lot of Emmys, and it's HBO Real Sports with Brian Gumbel. And, you know, a couple months ago, Dick McPherson, who was our football coach at Syracuse, passed away and was also briefly the coach of the New England Patriots. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame. I don't know if you ever met him, but just one of the most awesome people who's ever walked the planet. And I was really honored that his family asked me to speak at his funeral. So I did, and John Frankel, who's a correspondent on HBO Real Sports, went to Syracuse, played on the football team, and he had called me a couple days later just to say, hey, you know, I watched the eulogy. It was streaming on the athletic department website and on the Syracuse newspaper website. But anyway, it just got us talking, and you know, how have you been? What's new? Blah, blah, blah. So I mentioned my two brothers and what they're doing. And the thing that he seemed most interested in is we all have a world championship ring from a different sport. I have a World Series championship ring from when the Red Sox won in 2004. I was one of their broadcasters, and Ryan has the ring from the Celtics when he was the assistant GM and they won an NBA championship, and Terry has a Super Bowl ring when he was scouting for the Ravens when they won their first Super Bowl. So he said, oh my goodness, you know, you guys might be the only family that could say that, three boys and have a ring in three different sports. So that was sort of the hook. That part of it actually never got mentioned in the piece, but they did a fantastic job, and we were just really flattered and honored to be asked because, you know, as I said, I think it's one of the, you know, it's an excellent show. They're quality journalists, and they do a lot of really good work.
So, and I mean, we've talked about your dad a lot, and I know your dad would be so proud of the accomplishments of all of the children. When we started, I think we were in our second or third year, and they did a piece on us, Brian Gumbel, because he wanted to play golf with me and Wilbon. So we did this whole piece. And you know who directed the piece? Ezra Edelman.
Oh, no.
Ezra Edelman.
What's he done?
Directed the piece. And then, so like I say, you think that OJ thing was good? You should watch this 12 minutes on Real Sports. Ezra Edelman did
well,
that.
Well, I can't imagine how much work goes into this. Cause, I mean, I don't know. They shot dozens of hours of video of me, my two brothers. They followed us all over the country.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a 10-minute piece. So their budget must be fantastic. And ours was produced by a woman named Barrett Remack, who is a wonderful person. One of the best parts of the whole thing was just getting to know her and the associate producer, Evan Borgos, and becoming their friend. They were, that was a special thing for me and our family.
All right, so I'll get to the game, because I should do that, because we both work for the same company. Some of the Monday night games have been unattractive matchups to this point. This is not. This is a traditional rivalry, a fierce rivalry that goes back to things like the body bag game and the Redskins and the Eagles, you know, as institutions, hate each other. The Eagles are good this year. The Redskins don't have a lot of wins, but they came close with Kansas City and they beat Oakland, which is going to look a little bit better on the resume as time goes on. Not as big a rivalry for the Redskins as the Cowboys, but I think more than the Giants, I do. I think that the Philadelphia Redskin games are a big deal. You get that sense, right, that this is a big one. This is a good
one. Yeah, I really do. We're excited about it, and now it turns out Philadelphia has the best record in the league, so that's exciting. The place will be going wild, I'm sure. I've spent some time this week, as you just said, sort of reading about some of the matchups from the past and the history of it. So we're familiar with that part. And, you know, we're excited about it. You know, as you said, our schedule's kind of been up and down, but yeah. I do think the league made a conscious effort this year to make our schedule better. And we're going into a 3-week stretch here where, you know, not only do we have the Redskins and the Eagles this week, but, you know, as I mentioned, we go back to Kansas City for Denver at Kansas City. That's a great rivalry.
That is.
A very important game. And then we have Detroit at Green Bay. So,
I
think we have 3 good weeks. Our ratings are actually up relative to last year.
Good.
You know, that's, you know, not the case around the rest of the league. And I think, you know, we should even pick up a little ground. And that's with some bad luck. You know, our first game was up against Hurricane Irma.
Yes.
So that was rough. And then, not that it matters at all, because it doesn't. And it really does put things like the meaningless nature of ratings in perspective. But we woke up on a Monday morning to, you know, what had happened in Las Vegas the night before. So, you know, it makes you realize those are the things that are important. And, if the ratings go up or down, a fraction really isn't important. When you ponder what those people went through in Las Vegas and what they're still going through, their families and friends and survivors. It's, you know, we don't need perspective, but that certainly provided some.
Sean, thank you so much for being on. When you do the research, you will find that, and I'm sure you know this, that at one period of time in the NFC East, Jimmy Johnson, Joe Gibbs, Bill Parcells, and Buddy Ryan were the coaches against each other. And I'm not sure that you will ever find that in any other, you know, collection, any other division of the NFL. And those are really big names. Yeah.
That would be tough to beat.
Those are big names.
For sure. I'll have our researchers find out exactly when that was.
That was, well, you didn't call me, because I know.
When was that?
Like the latter part of the 80s. You know, they were all there. They were all there together.
I could probably figure it out if I wasn't so lazy myself. But, you know,
don't worry about it. I don't trust the researchers.
I'm too busy going to play golf at Chicago Golf. See what you've done now.
Yeah. Yeah, playing golf is good. Thank you, Sean. Have a great game.
Thank you, my friend. Good to talk to you. Have a great day.
Sean McDonough, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with, what do we have? Do we have news next?
That's right, news.
We're going in order today. This is a fantastic day. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Simply Safe home security ad. Nothing is more essential in protecting your home, but getting traditional home security can be a punishing and expensive task. Now there's a better way. Protect your home with Simply Safe home security. By the way, Simply is spelled S-I-M-P-L-I. There's no Y. Simply Safe. Ask anyone locked into a long-term security contract. They're on the hook for 3 years, paying $45, $55 a month. Or ask someone who's had a system hardwired in their walls. The installation loan cost them a fortune. Simply Safe got rid of everything that makes home security a hassle. They make it easy for you. There's no long-term contract. There are no obligations. This is award-winning home security. Tech magazine CNET, I guess that's what it's called, calls Simply Safe, quote, better, smarter home security, unquote. Your home's protected around the clock with 24/7 professional monitoring. If there's trouble, they will send police. The service costs just $15 a month with Simply Safe. That is 3 times less than what the other guys charge, and no hidden fees. Protect your home today. You can buy Simply Safe at your local Best Buy and have home protected by tonight. Have your home protected by tonight. Their Best Buys are all around. I guess they're all around the country. Or visit simplysafe.com/Tony for a special 10% off. Oh, that's simplysafe.com/Tony. 10% off your system. simplysafe.com/Tony.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is from Eric Stur in Lawrence, New Jersey. The song is called Until You Notice. My band is called Whatever Penny. I like that. Our debut album, Semaphore, is out on all streaming downloading platforms on October 20th, which is tomorrow, is
today.
It not? Is that today?
That would be today. By the Earth calendar.
That's today. Yeah. We're a guitar keyboard duo, and we wrote, recorded, and mixed it ourselves. All the jingles I've written for the show have prepared me for this. That's why we lift the weights, kids. You can check out our album for free on our website at whateverpenny.bandcamp.com or on iTunes, Spotify, Pandora. Not on the Hulu yet, unfortunately. Even more flattering than getting a jingle in the A block once a couple of years ago is the opportunity to share my music on the same platform as Mike Kinsella and American Football, a band that was incredibly influential to me growing up. And this is again, Eric Stur in Lawrence, New Jersey, nice. Which is very, very nice.
Exit 287,
Michael,
I believe.
If people want to send in their music and have it played, how do they do it?
They can email the show and send their music to jingles at tonykornheiser.com.
Now, I've been very good over the last week and week and a half. I've never asked if we were selling anything, but are
I
we still?
I don't think that's true. But
it is true. It is true.
For him, he's been restrained.
Yeah. It is true. Okay.
Great restraint.
But do we still have the Johnny O code?
Yeah, so I would have.
So I'm wearing my Johnny O shirt today.
The weather is beginning to turn here on the East Coast, slowly but surely. So check out the Johnny O fall and winter line, get a new sweater. Dad has been wearing his shawl collar sweater, which I never thought that he would go for that look. But check out their line and use the Tony K code.
Lammy weather. Good Johnny O. Lammy weather.
You know, why wouldn't I do that? Also, in the audience today, Maureen brought her friend Sally in from St. Petersburg, Florida.
All right.
So we're happy to have her.
Is that St. Petersburg, Florida, or St. Petersburg, Russia?
St. Petersburg, Florida, okay. I believe.
Just want to make sure.
And we stuck around St. Petersburg when we heard it was a time for a change. Kill the czar and the ministers. Anybody want me to do all the lyrics to that? You know, yes. I'm not going to do that. Nigel has news for us.
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. And we will start off with the association. The NBA is underway this week.
Yeah.
We did not get to this yesterday.
You know, I've complained about how early it is and how we give ourselves over on PTI so completely to it. It's not that it's that early. It's that playoffs in all leagues have expanded to such a large degree that they've all added a month to 2 months to their season. So the seasons are endless.
Yes.
Like the World Series used to be over in the first week of October.
Right now.
The NBA season used to be over in the first or second week of May. These things go on forever now. That's why I object to the start of them, just because they go on forever.
Well, the Wizards were happy to start because they won the home opener against the Philadelphia 76ers.
This Not was so fast, my friend.
Did they not win that game?
In the silver lining. No, they won.
They won. John Wall.
John Wall took 28. So for the cheese boy who monitors this, let me pick my words out carefully. He took 28 shots.
10 of 28.
Made 10.
Yes.
Took 28. There's one point guard in the league that takes 28 shots. Russ Westbrook. He's the guy who does that. So why did John Wall do this? He did this because John Wall is persistently and consistently complaining about the lack of national television exposure for his career. He's done this for years. He was on a nationally televised game, and he said, I'm Russell Westbrook. That's what I'm going to be this year, is Russell Westbrook. Point guard, yeah, they won. He was spectacular at times. You're not going to win with your point guard taking 28 shots every single game. You're actually not going to advance in the playoffs when that happens because you can be guarded in the playoffs, and they will make the playoffs. He also talked about it being wolf season and wouldn't explain what wolf season is. Wolf season
wolf
is
season?
I eat the ball. That's wolf season. Okay. Am I wrong on this?
No, you're not wrong on it.
He's a great player.
And by the way, it should be pointed out, Russell Westbrook last night in his debut with Paul George and Carmelo Anthony was 21, 10, and 16, 16 assists, 7 of 12 from the floor.
Didn't take many shots. If you get 28 points on 28 shots, you're not helping anybody.
20 shots each for George and Anthony. But the Wizards, and this, we had the same conversation at the beginning of the season, every year, you will go nowhere giving up 115 points to opponents. I mean, ultimately, it always comes down to defense.
Bradley Beal, who is a shooter, took 17 shots, the second most. Nobody on the 76ers took more than 15 shots. I know you're all looking at me like I shouldn't be doing this.
Well,
but
it's numbers. We know
28
numbers.
Shots is a lot of shots.
Well, I think you missed this. The SportsCenter tweeted out a photo, welcome back to the NBA. The NBA is back, and it has, you know, the highlights of 6, 7, 8 players on it. John Wall missing from that photo.
Really? He even with a left-handed dunk, I'm surprised.
He retweets it saying jokes. So I think that might have contributed to the high volume of shots.
Well, this is what he,
it is wolf season.
Yeah.
Let's remember that.
It's wolf spiders.
Yeah.
Those guys.
Ben Simmons not injured in that
the Wolf
opener.
Of Washington, no, maybe injured. Could be his new, yeah. New nickname.
Yeah.
Yes, Gary.
Ben Simmons. 18, Ben Simmons 18 could be great.
18 and 10, right?
Is that what you got? And 5. Yeah. 18, 10, and 5. Ben Simmons might be great.
Right.
You never know if he's healthy. Same with Joel Embiid. Might be great.
Right.
You know, never know.
Gary mentioned the Knicks-Thunder game. The Thunder won that game 105-84.
Fantastic Carmelo Anthony response.
Yes.
Carmelo Anthony response. He's asked about the Knicks, and he goes, that chapter's closed.
No more Knicks.
Earlier that day, he said, I went through hell with the Knicks. Earlier in the same day, he tweeted out, I went through hell with the Knicks. So somebody would ask him about it, he'd go, right. No, that's closed.
No, I don't want to talk about
that's
that.
That's closed.
Don't want to talk about that.
They're good.
Yeah.
If Russell Westbrook, having done everything he did last year, decides, you know what, I'm going to be more like James Harden this year. I'm going to give the ball up a little bit. They could be really good because Carmelo Anthony can score 20 points a game and Paul George can score 23 to 25 points a game.
They went for 22 and 28, yeah. Respectively,
can.
Last night.
LeVar Ball made his debut last night.
No.
I'm sorry, not LeVar. I'm sorry.
Lonzo. LeVar Ball
LeVar
was
constantly. Fortunately, LeVar made his debut long ago.
Yeah, LeVar had a lot to say after the game because
yes, he did.
Lonzo did not exactly have a thrilling debut.
Got shut down by Patrick Beverley.
3 points, 4 assists, 9 rebounds, and Patrick Beverley was all
29 minutes.
Yeah, was all over him.
Must be the shoes.
Game. And yeah. After the game,
gotta
Beverley
be the
was
shoes,
heard
money.
Screaming, weak ass. Blankety blank, bring him out on the court with me and I will tear his blank up as he walked with word. And then LeVar Ball responded, yeah, you shut the blankety blank down and your check still ain't going to be no higher than what it is. You shut him down, okay, but who's Patrick Beverley? He played all last year. Nobody said nothing about him. Now we're looking at your first game. Why? Because Lonzo's name is attached to it.
And Patrick Beverley afterwards in the media availability said, and I think I have this quote right, with all the riffraff his father brings... People are going to come get him. People are going to come get him. Lonzo Ball is going to carry LeVar Ball's comments right. With him everywhere yeah. He goes. Right. Every player in the league is
target.
And he's a good player, mm-hmm. Lonzo Ball, but it's going to be harder than he can imagine. Cuz it's not college. Everybody's better. Everybody's really better in the pros.
Yeah.
So, anyway,
Michael Bennett, speaking out about the national anthem situation with the National Football League, said he's going to continue to sit during pregame renditions of the Star Spangled Banner, saying and also added that any negotiation about player conduct during the anthem should take place after Colin Kaepernick is signed by a team.
Two things are suggested here. One is the great problem that the NFL has in getting any sort of agreement. They have 55 players on each team. They have 32 teams. You know, you're always going to get 20 people around the league who are not going to do what you want them to do. Michael Bennett is very prominent with this whole thing. So that's hard. It's hard to do that. That's why the NFL was smart in saying we're not going to even have a policy. But for Michael Bennett to say nothing starts until – and I don't know who he speaks for. He speaks for Michael Bennett. I don't know how many other people he speaks for. But for him to say nothing starts until Colin Kaepernick gets a job. Now, if I'm an owner – and I may have a disagreement here with my good friend Sally Jenkins. But if I'm an owner in this particular situation, I'm going to say, we can negotiate a lot of things, but you can't tell me who has to be on my roster. You can't tell me, you can't tell my GM, you can't tell my coaches, you can't tell my players that we have to put X person, no matter who that person is, on the roster. I'm not going, right? I'm not going for that if you're an owner.
Yeah.
I'm not going for that.
Totally agree. Can I just make a larger point about this whole NFL anthem controversy? This and the attention paid to the grieving parents or spouses of dead service people. These are controversies that have been created by one man. This whole deal with the anthem was just playing out in the way that protests play out. Like they played out in this country for decades. They come, they go, they make their points.
It was not a big deal. It was not
a big deal. It would be gone now. It would be gone. And maybe something positive would have come out of it. I am just sick at the way this thing just keeps spitting in on itself.
Well, it's not going to stop.
It's not going to stop.
It has greater momentum now. And to the good, the owners have given the players power.
Yes.
They've given them a seat at the table. And when you do that, not all the – because, again, 55 on a team and 32 teams, close to 2,000 players, not all of them are going to agree with what the majority of them want to do.
Understood. You know? And that would have – I am confident that
stopped?
Would have sorted itself out, team to team, player to player, and possibly something good would have come out of it. But now it is just like this creature just feeding on itself. That's my sort of larger point
that's
for
okay.
the day.
Yeah. That's okay. Well put. That's all right.
Well, on that sort of note,
General Kelly.
Yeah, John Kelly, the chief of staff of President Trump. Yeah, came out and defended Trump's handling of the call to the widow of the fallen soldier in Niger and also proceeded to sort of blast the Congresswoman Frederica Wilson from Florida for what he called politicizing the deaths of these soldiers, and then very personally gave his account of how
let's get to that.
You deal with this because his son was killed in service
8 years ago.
Yes.
So let's get rid of the Congresswoman and let's get rid of the president.
Okay.
And let's just talk about the general who lost a child in a war and is a soldier himself, and talked about how he found out and what was said to him and by his dear friend, not commanding officer, equal officer, I think, at that point.
Dunphy.
They were both generals.
Yeah.
And Kelly said, this is where the controversy with Trump is the notion of you know what you signed up for. But what Kelly said was you do. You know what you signed up for. You're with the people that you love. You're doing the thing that you want to do. The most moving thing to me was when Kelly said, and I was so upset at everything that went on that I walked through Arlington Cemetery for an hour and a half and looked at the graves, some of which belonged to people I put there because they were doing my will as a commander. And so, I mean, for me, you hear that and you say, okay, we're done here. This guy is somebody we completely respect and we back away from and we let him have his moment.
And what I thought was so important was the process he described of what happens to a fallen soldier.
What the other soldiers do.
How many of us knew that?
You wrap him in a shroud the best you can find.
He goes here and he's on ice, and he goes here, he's on ice, and then he comes back to Dover.
Yeah.
I mean, the sort of sensitive but solid way in which he recounted that
and
process.
Vivid. Very vivid.
Vivid.
You know, the notion of the service, the reporting service members being outside the family's home waiting for the first lights to go on.
That's
so
right. That's why you just
really
know
moving.
This is not something you trifle with.
And this is, and also, you know, this is someone who, if he's near that office, you feel a little bit better.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
You feel a little bit better.
But I thought his marks were also very well rounded, just more general comments about how this country has changed in his eyes regarding life, religion, women. And those were broad brush comments that I think a lot of people should take to heart. After he finished, I was like, why don't you just run for president?
I know, it was so dignified.
Unanimous acclamation.
It was so oddly dignified, wasn't it?
Yes. Right.
At least
Yeah.
From the sublime to the somewhat ridiculous, I know you're very worked up about the upcoming release of a movie called The Murder on the Orient Express.
Because there's no reason to do this. They did this within the last 20 to 25 years, and it was brilliantly done.
1974 was when the first
whatever.
One came out.
It's right. All right, so I'm old, so it's 40 years. But it's brilliantly done, and it's available.
Yes.
It's available.
What I would say to you is
why?
This. For a new generation, it might be available, but a lot of this new generation probably doesn't know it exists and wouldn't go back and see it. And it's a great story, and it's a terrific cast.
How was the last cast?
The last cast was great. I'm not going to deny that.
There are a whole lot of people in that.
Albert, he was in the 1974. Albert Finney, Lorne Bacall, Ingrid Bergman, Jacqueline Bisset, Sean Connery, Sir John Gielgud, Anthony Perkins, Vanessa Redgrave, Richard Widmark, Michael York. So
pretty good. That's pretty good. Right. Right. Who's in the new one?
This one has Arnold Schwarzenegger, Carrot Top, The Rock.
No, it does not.
This one has Kenneth Branagh, who is directing.
Great.
Penelope Cruz, Willem Dafoe, Judi Dench, Johnny Depp, Josh Gad, Leslie Odom Jr. You might not know his name.
I do.
He played Aaron Burr in Hamilton.
I do. He's from Hamilton.
Michelle Pfeiffer, is that how you pronounce her name?
Pfeiffer, I believe.
And Daisy Ridley, who was the big star in the Star Wars movies. So it's a nice cast. And to get sort of an endorsement by this, the great-grandson of Agatha Christie, James Pritchard, who runs, he's the chairman of Agatha Christie Limited, is very excited about this and very excited for
more money for him.
Well, yeah, but he wants to introduce Agatha Christie to a whole new generation. So I'm very excited for this.
All right.
Should we go to the premiere together?
No.
All right,
no.
Then.
I have one other question and I'll get out. Why are we building batteries that explode in airplanes?
Yeah.
Why are we building batteries like that?
What they're saying now is for these large laptops that they shouldn't be checked because they seem to be exploding in...
They seem to be exploding. Right. Exploding.
Very much
the key word, they overheat and explode.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Very much like the drummers of Spinal Tap.
Let's get out of here.
All right.
We have Old Guy when we return. Jeff Ma,
that's right,
is going to be with us doing predictive analysis,
which is
betting.
Yes.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
We're raising the bar.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. We don't usually play slow songs. This is the haunting Angie by the Rolling Stones. We're playing this because why?
This hit number one on this date in 1973. This is off the album Goat's Head Soup.
44 years ago, just around the time that Murder on the Orient Express was being released.
Which version?
This is written for Mick Jagger's daughter. Keith Richards' daughter.
Well, the story about this, they thought it was, and then they thought it might be about David Bowie's first wife, Angela. Then they thought it might be about Marianne Faithfull and the breakup between Mick Jagger and her. And Keith Richards has come out and been like, it's not about anybody. Because the daughter actually wasn't born yet, so he didn't even know the name of the child at that point.
I just read Keith Richards' autobiography, and I'm pretty sure he said it's
in his 2010 memoir, Life, Richard said that he had chosen the name at random when writing the song before he knew that his baby would be named Angela or even knew that his baby would be a girl.
I stand corrected.
Is he a trustworthy source on his own life?
Yeah, I thought my friend Mike Litwin and Mike and Susie Litwin, their daughter is Angela, and I always thought that she might have been named for this particular song. She's now, I believe, a law professor at the University of Texas.
Well, Michael is named for... Michael
Mick Jagger.
Philip Jagger, is he not?
Yes, absolutely.
People should know
I thought
that.
It was Michael Corleone. Is that not right?
Not Michael Corleone. Jeff Ma joins us now. This is a great treat for me because people who remember my Jeff Ma story when I was, it was like the most humiliating moment of my life, which makes me very, very happy. I'm not going to go through the whole story now, but Jeff worked for a long time at ESPN in the predictive analysis field and is now doing, you're doing a podcast, right? Which is called Bet the Process, right?
Yep. We're trying to do a much more highbrow or attempt at a highbrow podcast about sports gambling because most of the stuff out there is very much done by touts and guys that are selling picks. And we're trying to bring like the whole stuff that I'm doing with this guy, Rufus Peabody, who was also on ESPN. And both of us felt like the way that ESPN made us talk about sports gambling wasn't the best way to do it because you know, we were doing 1 minute hits or 30 second hits with anchors that didn't really know a lot about sports gambling and oftentimes weren't able to talk about it the right way. So we're doing a podcast. We'll see how it goes. I mean, I think everyone's doing a podcast these days.
I know I am.
To do, so.
Yeah,
there you go. Like I said, everybody's doing podcasts. So
I have a bunch of questions, but the truth of the matter is, and I'm going to get to this eventually, the truth of the matter is that for people like me, talk to people like you, and we want you to tell us what games to bet on. That's what we're actually looking for. The networks, you know, they always say that they're not involved in gambling, but every one of the networks alludes to gambling. They allude to the spreads. They bring people in to say who they're going to bet on that week. What do they do wrong, Jeff? In other words, to have satisfied you, what should they have done?
Well, see, that's sort of the nature of the you know, the name of the pod, which is Bet the Process. And what I think we'd like to do more is talk about the process and how we get to what we're doing. Actually giving picks, I think, is challenging, because if you are a professional sports bettor, or you are someone that actually what they call an advantage player, someone that makes money betting on sports, it's hard to just give picks, because oftentimes you are looking for the best value. So an example of this is, like, let's take the New Orleans Saints Green Bay Packers game this week. You guys talked about it yesterday, and at that time the line was about 5.5, or it even got as high as 6. And that is a huge overreaction to the Aaron Rodgers injury. If this line had last week, you know, before the injury, this line would have been Green Bay favored by anywhere from, say, 5 to 6. So that's a 12-point swing. And Aaron Rodgers is amazing, obviously, you know, arguably the best quarterback in the league, probably the most valuable player. But Hundley is a capable backup, and that line move should only be about 6. It shouldn't be about 12. So there was a lot of value at that time. And now the line's gone down to 4, where the Saints are only favored by 4. So I would say that there isn't very much value on the Saints anymore. The true line there should probably be somewhere between 1 or 2.
So is that what you're doing? You're looking to see where there is an overreaction, where the odds are set at places that make no sense?
Well, what we're doing is looking to find ways to find value via analytics on sports betting, because obviously that's the way that you make money. You find value, you find these small edges based on having either a different opinion than the market, having a, you know, information asymmetry, or having sort of a better model to model things. You know, there are lots of examples, like injuries are certainly one example. And, you know, if you think about another example of injuries, the New York Giants last week going into Denver got up to as high as a 14-point underdog. And the reason was they had all these injuries at wide receivers.
Yes.
Now, most research will tell you that the skill positions, wide receiver and running back, are a bit overrated when it comes to injuries, because these are the, you know, high-profile positions that people see, but they're obviously not that hard at times to replace. There's certainly guys that are difference makers at those positions. The most important position, obviously, is quarterback, but, you know, wide receiver, even these cluster injuries, what they call them, which are a bunch of injuries at the same position, tend to be a bit overvalued. And on our podcast, we talked a little bit about that game, specifically saying that we thought the Giants should only have been about 4 to 5 point underdogs in that game, and we recommended we're entered into the Super Contest pick, which is like the World Series of poker for sports gambling, and one of our picks last week was the Giants at sort of plus 13 or plus 12 or whatever it was in the contest.
Is football the easiest sport to bet, or is it just the most sought after, and so people concentrate on it?
You can't just say football right now. Football, I think, is difficult to bet on because of a few things. One play, one turnover, whatnot, can have such a huge impact on the game. And the ball's not even round. It doesn't even bounce, you know, the way you would expect. So much of fumbles or who recovers fumbles are often luck. And really, they can have a disproportionate impact on the actual score of the game. The other problem with football is that you don't have very many trials. So if you're an analytics person and you're trying to build models on this stuff, like an NFL season, an entire NFL season is 16 games for a team and can be a small sample size. So you could have a situation where a team, even in a season, is underrated the whole season just because of the fact that, you know, during that season they've, you know, underperformed their actual analytics. But that can continue for 16 games because it's just not that many. Baseball is obviously a game with many more trials and much more analytics around it. But I would say the baseball market is much more efficient. I'd say the football and NFL, the market is very analytic, is very efficient because there are a lot of people betting on it and there's a lot of money in it. College football, I would say, has a bit more opportunities because there's just a lot more for the books or the you know, sports books to cover.
When you look at, let's say, college for a second, because it always struck me that home field is more meaningful in a college game than in a pro game. Do you take things like that into consideration? Is there a formula that says if you're at home, it is worth X, and it's worth more in college by far than it is in the pros?
I wouldn't say by far. It's definitely worth more. I think one of the things that you have to think about – when you consider this whole idea of home field, is home field is not a static thing. Home field is something that depends on the distance of travel. It also depends on whether that home team is rested. You know, people will say things like the Chargers have no home field. Well, that's not true because teams have to travel. An East Coast team traveling West Coast, that is going to impact them, and that is going to impact the Chargers' home field for sure. So there is more that goes into it, and home field is often dynamic. And yes, it tends to be a little bit more for college than for pro.
Okay, so now we get to the part where I ask you to make picks because we have Chuck Todd makes picks. He makes football picks, even though he's the host of Meet the Press. James Carville makes picks, makes football picks, many of which we don't even understand what he's saying, and he's a political analyst, and we have a monkey. So, you know, we're adding you to this great pantheon of people, and you probably are the only one that knows what he's talking about. If you could give us a few and tell us why this week you like these particular picks.
Can't I just talk about politics instead then?
No, you can in a later podcast. Yes, you can.
Okay, because I got a lot of opinions on politics these days. I never used to care about it, but now these days it's...
Go figure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, okay, let's start in college. Most of the stuff that we do is around the NFL, but college certainly presents some opportunities. I actually like Texas. They're playing Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State is a 7-point favorite. Texas, Tom Herman, their coach, you know, back to his days in Houston, has been very good as an underdog. Oklahoma State is a team that has a very high-powered offense, arguably the top offense in all of college football. But because of that offense, they tend to be overrated. They've been a little bit overrated all season. And I like Texas in this role, getting 7 at home.
That's interesting because, I mean, a lot of people crushed Tom Herman early on, including Urban Meyer. And I thought Tom Herman's comments were misinterpreted, but they sort of fell off the board. That was after the Maryland game. I mean, that was a stunner, was it not? That was a stunner, the Maryland game.
Yeah, it was obviously a stunner, but you know, like, it takes a little while for a coach to actually get his system in place. So, you know, that loss probably did a lot more for him and his long-term ability. I mean, he's not playing for this year. He's certainly playing
right
for the future, and you know, again, in this role, and the numbers, our numbers say that, you know, he should be more like a 4-point underdog. So you're getting some line value there because of Oklahoma State being a bit overrated.
Mm-hmm. What else?
We can move on to the NFL. Chicago, the Bears, getting 3 at home against Carolina. Obviously, I'll be pretty interested in watching Luke Kuechly's concussion status. There's no guarantee that he's going to play. He's obviously a very big part of their defense. But what's interesting is that Chicago actually has a top 10 defense in yards per play. They're only allowing 4.9 yards per play, which makes them essentially the same as Carolina. And yards per play is something that, you know, I'll talk about a lot on these segments because it's a better way to measure a team's performance in terms of offense and defense than a lot of the other metrics people will look at, like total yards or things like that, because it's much more sort of predictive going forward. In terms of Carolina, their offense is a bit overrated because they have a lot of success on third down. Their third down conversion rate is number 3, whereas their yards per play offensively is in the bottom third. And I don't think that that third down conversion is sustainable. So I do think their offense is a bit overrated. So I like Chicago plus the 3.
I want to ask another question here, because if we were both sports writers and we were talking about this game, this question would come up. And that is that Cam Newton has not done the media for 2 straight days. And it is very possible that he carries into these games the burden of the public view of him ever since the incident with the female reporter in Charlotte. Do you take stuff like that into account, or do you say, I can't take this into account? He will not be that way when he gets on the field. He's a pro.
I mean, those are the things that we leave for sports writers. And honestly, those are the things that create often value in these situations. I mean, his whole incident was 2 games ago, and he went out and had one of his best games ever right after that. Now, because he had a poor game against Philly, people want to bring that up as sort of this narrative of maybe this is bothering him. You know, Cam, from what I've seen, he's not letting these things bother him at all. You know, he's a,
I don't want to say a sociopath, but certainly when you are able to divorce yourself from everything that's going on around you, do you think he really lost any sleep about that incident?
No, I don't. I actually don't.
So the actual narrative is like, there's no narrative there. It's
okay.
Just something that sports writers bring up to have something to talk about.
That's what I did for 40 years, so I'm used to it. You got another one for us, Jeff?
I don't want to disparage your profession for 40 plus years. So.
Thank you.
In terms of when you look for value often in football, you are looking for ugly things and betting on ugly things. And the ugliest thing in the NFL, or one of them, is certainly Cleveland. So I like Cleveland plus 5.5 against Tennessee this week. Tennessee's off a short week. They don't have a very healthy Mariota. And I think Cleveland being an undefeated, sort of a winless team, and you know, no one wants to back them. You're getting some value there in the line being 5.5. And obviously they're motivated, certainly, because they want to get their first win. And then finally, I like the Giants at 4.5. Hopefully it'll go up a little bit before. Seattle is a bit of an overrated team. I've mentioned the sort of Giants cluster injuries at wide receiver not being quite as important as people think, and there being some value because of that.
It's fabulous. We hope you're right. We hope you're right on every single one.
Well, the move is to go 4-0 and then never come back.
Right, never come back. Right. And then we can just say to Chuck Todd, who needs you? Go back to your Sunday morning show. Thank you, Jeff.
No, well, I told you, if I go 4-0, then I get to come on and just talk about politics.
You can do that. It's fine. But we'd like you to fly across the country, though, and actually be here.
Okay, that sounds perfect. Yeah. I could do a whole pod with you guys where I just talk about politics.
Thank you, Jeff. Jeff Ma, right, boys and girls. Cody. That was great. He is, I'm going to make a very long story short, but I had seen him once on television, and he had been vaporized. I mean, they just brought in, like, Lenny Kravitz came in, and it was an ESPN show, and the next thing you knew, Jeff Ma, who was in the middle of a segment, was gone, and everybody was concentrating on Lenny Kravitz, and I met him, and I mentioned this to him, and I didn't know who he was. And I made some ridiculous offer, like, if you do this for me, I'll just give you $50. Because I thought he had no money. I thought he was
some piker trying to break in.
Right. Then I found out, do you know the movie 21?
Of course.
Yeah.
About the MIT kids.
Well, the book Bringing Down the House,
right,
before that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's him.
Yeah.
That's him.
He was one of the MIT kids that went and broke the casinos.
40 times smarter than I am.
And
at
wealthier.
That point, 40 times richer than I was. Because he had done all that. So, and I really liked him. That was really good. All right, we will take a break. We'll come back with emails and jingles when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Can we talk through it? Can we talk through it? The Chabos. Can we talk through it? Come on, man. Things are falling from the trees. Voice on the show, those clinking forks mean to chew my soul. Cause those clinks mean they're paying me dough. Open for breakfast if you didn't know. Stem the eventual end of the inheritance, inevitable. Hold up, wait a minute, do I hear what I think I heard?
Fantastic. From Elliot Olshansky, working with Luke Overbay on the Leaf Blower.
Yeah.
The Leaf Blower
Now,
song.
People have accused us of just tweeting out the same Leaf Blower picture after week. But
no,
I would say, look back
new.
At them. You're wearing different clothes.
It's new all the time.
Like clockwork every
Thursdays. Before we get into the mailbag, let me say thank you to Sean McDonough and Jeff Ma for coming on the show. I'd also like to thank our sponsors today, Blue Apron and Simply Safe. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple, Spotify, Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review.
When I say people, I may as well call her out. It's Jen Babish specifically who accused me of doing that.
It's not so. It's not so.
Yes.
From Derek Hughes in Logan Circle in D.C., last night the First Tee of Washington held its awards dinner at Woodmont Country Club. The second annual Spirit Award, which is emblematic of the organization's core values, is named after my son, Bam, who passed away suddenly last year at the age of 11. When I reached the dais, I asked the board member holding the award we were about to present if he was Jack Vardaman, the great Jack Vardaman. He leaned over and said, yes, La Cheeserie. As the award winner gave her speech, in which she extolled the help and encouragement Bam gave her, I teared up. I felt a consoling hand on my shoulder. In that moment, I knew what you already knew. He really is the great Jack Vardaman. As I left the dais, I told him what a pleasure it was to meet him, and we exchanged farewell with Cheeseries. From Jason Guthrie, dear Bootsy's grandpa, I'm excited to be making my first trip to Chatter on Monday with my good friend and fellow Cornell University alumni for breakfast before heading up to Whiskey Creek Golf Club to play in a tournament there. Is that tournament you and Michael are playing in?
Indeed.
I recall that earlier in the week, Gary had referenced he and Michael were playing in the tournament that day as well. If it's the same one, please ask Michael if he'll give me the 18 strokes I need to compete. About a year ago, you signed off on PTI thanking my friend Matt Jones for his work on your trees. Yes, he's very, very good. Like other many littles before me, I jumped to my feet and shouted, I know that guy, as we've been friends for about 10 years. At the recent 6th birthday celebration for my feminine child, he and I chatted about the state of your dead tree. He said you should give him a call if that hasn't been taken care of yet. At the very least, please let us know how that woeful tale ends. Thanks for all the entertainment, Jason Guthrie. Dr. John Grantham, Herndon, Virginia. Congratulations to Michael for being a golf tournament champion as both a player and a coach. Does this mean he should get to shoot hoops for free at any basketball court in the D.C. area? Yes, he can shoot hoops for free at any basketball court. Yes, he can. From Scott LeBrun in Del Rapids, South Dakota. Dear Jay Porthauser. First, my masculine child just celebrated his 5th birthday on October 11th. If you do the math, you'll find that he was born on 10-11-12.
Nice.
So I've got that going for me. I should note that, unsurprisingly, the delivery rooms in the hospitals were busy that particular day. But unlike those other labor-inducing cheaters, my son's birthday was naturally selected. Secondly, did I hear Chuck Todd correctly when he suggested that the podcast is best enjoyed with a couple-day delay? Podcast delay? I can't believe nobody thought of this before.
Yeah. Boy.
Chris McBride, Charlotte. I think this analogy sums up the highlights in the second half of Thursday's show. Chris Saliza is to J. Crew as Chuck Todd is to Ralph Lauren. Cheaper, but there's a noticeable drop in quality. We kid because we care. From Jim Partridge, who lives in Alexandria, Virginia, by way of Massapequa, Long Island. I know it well, Massapequa, Massapequa Park. My brother and I shared a Newsday route in the mid to late 60s, unfortunately, right before you started at the paper, and I also competed in soccer, basketball, and golf against your Hewlett High School. The reason for my email, did you see Uranus this morning when you were walking Jesse? You should be able to see it again tonight, but as this article says, Uranus is going to look really, really cool Thursday night. Uranus is its brightest because it's directly opposite the sun, being closer to the Earth and brighter than at any other time of the year. Uranus is visible all night long, and its blue tree color is unmistakable. Uranus lies 60 degrees above the southern horizon at its peak around 1 a.m., and this is the highest Uranus has appeared since February 1963. You were naming noteworthy people from Long Island yesterday. Some Massapequa names, Jerry Seinfeld, the Baldwin brothers. I knew the Baldwin brothers from there. Brian Setzer and Tim Van Patten, the White Shadow and now an acclaimed director, both in my high school class, and Ron Kovic. Ron Kovic wrote The 5th of July, didn't he? Born on the 5th of July? Born on the 4th of July? Wasn't that Ron Kovic? I thought it was. Gavin Luer in Tampa, Florida. I am listening to Thursday's podcast, and I correctly hear Chuck Todd suggest that listening after at least a 24-hour delay is a preferred way to consume the pod. What a grand idea, right up there with the Purple Line and Post Points. From Dylan Reese in Los Angeles.
You're correct on Kovic.
Thank you. Thank you for this week's update on Tiger Woods and all your regular updates on Tiger Woods since he last won a major in 2008. In the same spirit, could you please start providing similar coverage of other athletes who won championships in 2008 and then never again? Quarterly to monthly discussions of Plaxico Burress, Paul Pierce, Brad Lidge, and Chris Chelios would be much appreciated. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, do wear white.
Let me ask you a question. How much do you think I can bench press?
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for coming. Picture time.
this. We wanted this. We wanted this for ourselves.